Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program I explore the latest in unfolding paradigms, how we are changing as a planetary civilization. And tonight's guest is someone who's devoted much of her life to this work. Her name is Paula Harris, and she is one of the premier UFO investigators that we have. And this is sort of a UFO month because there'll be a great conference happening in New York on the 22nd with some other UFO investigators, including Linda Moulton Howe, Whitley Strieber, and Richard Dolan. And hopefully we'll have Paula Harris sometime in the spring to present her work. But right here, welcome, Paula.
Well, thank you so much for asking me.
Well, you are one of the stars in the field, you know, and you're doing some new work. So I wanted to inform people of what you're up to and maybe a little background. But, you know, but let's just hear about what you've been doing as far as like exopolitics or ufology recently.
Well, I think it might be interesting to start with a little background in that, first of all, well, you mentioned stars in the field, but you know, there are very few women in the field, and like you know, Linda Howe, Leslie Kane, and I, we're the people probably that are the journalistically the most known. And in my case, you know, we could invite more women to be part of this. But anyway, in my case, I'm a international journalist because I spent an awful lot of time in Italy. I have 15 years, in fact. So what I do usually, I was trained by the late J. Allen Hynek, who was an astronomer. He was a scientist back in 1979. I worked with him until he died in 1986. So what I decided to do was to research this really weird phenomenon, and you got to admit it's really weird, by going there and doing it in person. In other words, what we called field research, which not a lot of people do today, mainly because it costs a lot of money and you have to fly all over the world. So I take my own money, and what am I doing lately is I'm doing two major cases. Do you want me to cover these two?
No, but before you go into that, I just want a little background on J. Allen Hynek, because he is so interesting, especially in this field. I mean, he coined the terms close encounters, but he started as a government debunker. He started as an Air Force consultant in order to kind of prove that the whole UFO field was just ridiculous. And then something happened, and no one ever has explained to me how he went from someone who called his investigation swamp gas to a true, not believer, but someone who was really aware of the truth behind that. I mean, what was that transformation? And I've never heard a good story about how he shifted from one to the other.
Well, first of all, his Blue Book job was a job. I mean, he was supposed to debunk. The Air Force didn't hire him to say that there were UFOs. So what happened, really, in essence, was that he could not explain them all. So anybody that is an intellectual, that is intelligent, knows that a huge amount of them couldn't be explained. And what he ended up doing was, he became very confused and took the ones that couldn't be explained, all those cases, and started his own research at the Center for UFO Studies in Evanston, Illinois. And when I met him, that's what he was doing. He was a CUFOS, you know, Center for UFO Studies in Evanston, Illinois. And what he asked me to do was to translate all the Italian cases because he knew I was Italian. Mm-hmm. So when you got a phenomenon that's everywhere, it's everywhere. It's not a United States phenomenon. It's all over the world. And you try to figure it out, and you can't, then you know that there's a few, there's a big mystery here. And you deal with that on your show. You deal with mysteries and realities. But let me just add one more thing. What made me meet him was Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the movie. He was a consultant on that. He knew Spielberg. And when I went to Evanston, he basically had Spielberg on his board of directors. Can you imagine that?
That's nice, yes. But what was he before? I mean, what was his background?
Oh, he's an astronomer. He was teaching at Wesleyan University. And at first he was teaching at Wesleyan when the government got hold of him, you know, because he was an astronomer. And astronomers are the ones in those days that looked up at the stars and knew what was up there. And he kept telling me when I met him, he said, "Now, Paula, don't you mistake Venus for a UFO. Because, you know, Venus is the first star that comes out at night. It's so darn bright. And people think, oh, it's just sitting up there that it's a UFO." And later on, when I met him, he was a professor at Northwestern in Illinois.
I mean, I actually love some of the stuff he's been writing about, or he wrote about. I mean, he appeared at the UN at a big conference that happened there, right?
You're right, yeah.
And he said some beautiful, beautiful things as a part of this mystery, because you're right. It's a mystery that takes us out of our old way of thinking into some new ways of looking at reality. And should I just quote this one thing that I think maybe it'll... I've been writing about this too, because the whole idea of UFOs is all about new realities. So I've been collecting some of the great quotes of our time, and the one that I really like for J. Allen Hynek, I'll just tell you, is this one. And this is to the UN. He said this, you know. He said when he, let me see if I can find this. He said, "When the long-awaited solution to the UFO problem comes, I believe that it will prove to be not merely the next step in the march of science, but a mighty and totally unexpected leap, into a new consciousness. It's not just like, oh, there are beings and ships flying around. That's been the problem, I think. We've been trying to put the whole situation into a category we can understand. And I think you're right. We cannot understand this."
Yeah, and the thing about your show, and I got to be honest with you, too, is that you don't isolate just UFOs. I mean, it's all connected. You know, I did Coast to Coast with George Nuri, and he asked me, he said, "Is it paranormal? Is it interplanetary? Is it interdimensional? What is this stuff?" And I said, "It's all the above."
So it has to be.
And then I wrote a book called Exopolitics, All of the Above, because you can't put this in a box. I don't know what box you want to put this in.
Well, exactly. And the book I'm writing about, it's called How to Create New Realities. We need to think in a different way, but it's the unknown. And anytime we face the unknown, the way we cognize reality has to change. And that's what we're up against. That's why there hasn't been a disclosure or an open contact. This is my feeling.
Well, no, I think I got to be honest with you.
Yes.
And it is the reason there hasn't been a disclosure is the United States was heavily involved in back engineering this technology, and they're not about to upset the apple cart with the economy when we're a fossil fuel economy. I mean, these creatures or whoever they are up there are not flying around with gas and oil. And
right.
If we've back engineered something, it's not using gas and oil. And do we want to use it? Yes. And could we save the planet if we used a new kind of electrogravitic technology? Yes. But and that's why, and I'm going to go straight to this, that's
yes.
why there was a conference, a major economic conference, somewhere in November where in Saudi Arabia, and Stanton Friedman, Michio Kaku, Jacques Vallée, and Nick Pope were invited to speak. And why would they be invited to speak at an economic conference? Because, I mean, Stanton Friedman, the first words out of his mouth, bless him, were UFOs are real. What would those people be interested in UFOs for?
Right. And what was the upshot of that whole conference? And also Michio Kaku, he seems to be sort of on the fence about UFOs anyway.
Well, he's the typical scientist. You lose all your funding, you lose all your grants, you lose the money that's given to you to do research if you go way out on a limb and talk about UFOs. Look at us. I mean, nobody's funding us. Nobody's funding our research.
Well, we need some funding. But so what do you think was the result of those scientists and experts coming forward in Saudi Arabia?
It's called strategic planning. It's called down the road, we're going to run out of this fossil fuel. Down the road, we have to change the paradigm for what we use as our energy, and who and what has the future energy. I mean, what if we have discovered an alternative energy source? I mean, that which you call zero gravity or whatever you want to call zero energy, a free energy, whatever it is. What if we got to get started on that? That isn't something you do the day before. That's something you plan. And that was one conference. The second conference was in Chicago, Illinois, with Farrakhan, who I think is the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, who invited Jaime Maussan, Roger Lear, Don Schmidt, and A.J. Gebhard to speak to him about UFOs. What is he doing? And he, again, this is the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, asking about UFOs. And he offered to support their research. And I interviewed Don Schmidt about that. It's on my website.
What's your website? What is
my website? My website is www.paolaharris.com. Paola is Italian for Paula. So right. The thing is, if people go there, they'll see what Don Schmidt said about. And I really wanted to know. I mean, that was a situation in the United States. So are there people that are interested in UFOs for various technologies and various energies in the future? Yes.
Well, let's talk about the latest stuff you've just been discovering, because, you know, like any field, we have to be fed with new information, or else, you know, people sort of absorb the old thing and then they sit back and say, so what? So, you know, and I think the sightings have been increasing around the world, that's for sure. More mainstream television is covering this. But what have you discovered?
Well, first of all, so you're right about the sightings, but you got to understand, they're not in the United States all the time. China's airport was just shut down in the beginning of September because of a UFO over the airport in China. Well, that thing, that craft is not on vacation. What's it doing there? In Italy, in Rome, there were some heavy sightings around the 15th of September also. And there's been sightings in New Zealand, in Australia, and the mainstream television does cover it in other countries. If there's something happening here, I think people are just used to seeing it. I don't think they make any big deal unless it's something like the Phoenix Lights. I mean, that was something, that was a phenomenon. But, you know, people go out and see things all the time with their video cameras. But I'm past the sightings, and this is one of the reasons I was talking to you about this earlier.
Yes.
I'm way past the sighting stage and more into the firsthand witness stage and contact and what to do about the fact that this is real. And I guess the definition that I have of exopolitics is the scholarly study of the alien presence on Earth and the sociological as well as the political implications, like what do we do because this is happening? And I guess you want to know about my two stories, the new one. Well,
yeah, I do. I also want to know also, before you get, how the Italian population is kind of dealing with it. I mean, because Americans, I don't want to say they're stupid, but they're sort of more mind-controlled, I feel, than Europeans. But so how are the Italians, like, dealing with some of the stuff that's happening over there?
Well, you know, the problem is, here in America, we got a lot on our plate. We're on survival mode. Americans have so much on their plate, including, you know, those people that say Obama's going to disclose. There's no way he's going to take this on when everybody's worried about jobs. There's no way anybody's going to take this on. I mean, it's such a way out topic that it would ruin the career of anybody who touched it, the way it did the career of Dennis Kucinich when he was running for president. I don't know if you remember that. When Shirley MacLaine happened to mention that he had a sighting at her ranch, he had a sighting of a landing.
I talked to him about that, and he said, "I can't talk about this now." You know, he felt it would jeopardize any chance he had for the presidency. So
it did. Because she was very honest. She's an honest person. There's a woman again. she was on the Today Show, and what she did is tell Matt Lauer that she was sitting there with Kucinich, who she's the godmother of his daughter. I mean, there's like family. And all at once, this thing in New Mexico comes out of the sky and lands. And they're watching this. And so Shirley MacLaine took the opportunity to tell the truth. But you know, the general public is not ready for that. So it ruined everything because, you know, then they start making fun of you. Poor Kucinich.
When is that going to change? I mean, that is such a low. I mean, we're doing a press conference in New York with some of the people that are coming October 22nd. People can find out about that on FIONS website, FIONS.org. We're doing a press conference. So I want to confront the press. Just like Stephen Bassett's been doing it all these years there's a reality here. Let's wake up and smell the coffee.
Yeah, but it's not going to come out. I adore him, and I think that he's doing so much. But this is not the government that's going to do any disclosure. it's being done in England. It's being done, you know, with the release of the files in Brazil and whatever. I really believe that you can address it like that and have a press conference. But, you know, we did something amazing. And if I do ever come to New York, maybe we should bring him with me, Jeff Peckman, who actually put it on the ballot. He put it on the ballot last spring.
Yes, he did do that.
Yeah, he did. And I'll tell you something. 30,000 out of 72,000 people voted yes. That's a lot. You should be happy about that. And they voted yes, to an extraterrestrial commission, to having a study group, which is what exopolitics is. It's just studying this stuff. And so if 30,000 people in the city of Denver are voting yes, let's study this, then I think that Jeff Peckman was very successful.
Mm. So let's hear about some of the new work that you've uncovered, because that's exciting.
Okay. You had asked me before about Europe, so I can go there first. When I lived in Italy for 15 years, there was the Mexico case, the Campeche case of the 11 UFOs, they would put it on the nightly news and the moderator would speak in Europe as if, well, you know, this is normal. We have a sighting in Mexico City. The government is asking for help. Do we have anything like this in Italy? So our Air Force in Italy does have a page on UFOs.
And oh, it does.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it just says, I mean, all the UFOs are unidentified. They don't have a page on spaceships, but they have a page on unidentified. So that's, I think, very advanced for a military, group to have just a page. You can see how many sightings and where they are all over Italy. But the case that I'm studying, that I have been studying for a long time, and I had the book translated into English, is called Mass Contacts, and it's on my website for the people that want to look at it. And the author is Stefano Breccia. He is an engineer, and this is going to sound amazing to you, but it's true. In 1956, a group of aliens that were over 10 feet tall lived on the shores of Pescara on the Adriatic coast and had an understanding with 10 Italians, and it was an experiment to see if these beings could live in contact with humans.
Wait. Let me just take that in for a second. Let me just repeat it.
I knew you'd have to take that in.
No, I think I've heard you say this, but I've always wanted to talk to you about this. There were beings, alien beings,
people-type alien beings, yes.
And they were over 10 feet tall.
They were 10 feet tall.
And there's must be pictures or documents
there are
or
pictures,
films.
Yes, all over the internet. It's called the Friendship or Amicizia case. Amicizia is the Italian word for friendship. The case is very famous. It's just that people aren't doing their homework, including my own colleagues, and don't take it on. But I have interviewed two of that group of 10 people, and the book is called, again, I had it translated in English, called Mass Contacts. It's the publisher's Author House, and it tells about this experiment. It was an experiment. And the Italians didn't know what to call these people, so they call them W56s because the year was 56, and believe it or not, W came after George Washington. They wanted because it was a brand new situation. And these people had an underwater base also, so that the town of Pescara in Italy had phenomenon of craft coming out of the water, and there's pictures of the craft, and it was covered by local journalists, and fishermen refused to go out and fish because of the kind of tunnels of water that would come out of that area. And now that most of the people are dead from that group, but there are three still alive that have given exclusive interviews, and there are videos on YouTube of these interviews.
Really? So this is actually really true. I mean, I know you wouldn't
true.
Be saying it unless it was, but...
No, it's true. I mean, this is they've got their voices on tape. I have copies of the material because Stefano Breccia came to the United States at Michael Sala's conference in Hawaii with all of the materials, with the audio of the aliens, the photos, with the photos of the UFOs. But you know something? It's almost like, and you're surprised, but I'm even more surprised that everybody in the field is sticking with their own research and don't bother to look at other stuff. And this is why this is not out there.
But So let's just say it is true, and I believe you that there's something happened. So these aliens, and where were they from?
Well, the aliens. They didn't say where they were from, but the Italians called them W56. They're from another place, place that they would call another name. We have our name for places. They don't come down and say we're from, I don't know, Clarion or Vega or whatever, because those are the Americans or human names for places. It doesn't really matter where they were from. They were not from here. Yeah. They were from
somewhere
else.
What was the result? Did they give us technology? Did they?
No. It was an experiment. What they wanted was they wanted minerals for minerals that didn't exist, that we didn't do anything with at the time. They needed these minerals, I think, for their underwater base, for their craft. What I can tell you about them, because everybody's wondering about aliens, is that the people that were their friends, the three that I interviewed, two of them, talked about their being vegetarian. So what they would do is, in the case of Stefano Brescia, they would supply these beings with what their needs were, and whole trucks of fruits would come in and vegetables. And while the driver was distracted, the beings would teleport all of what they needed in their base. I mean, they actually had a villa at Rocca Pia. Rocca Pia is on the Adriatic coast. People can look it up, Rocca Pia. And if people want to know about this case, they should go on internet, because the people that were involved in it are talking about it.
Where can we find it on the internet?
Okay, it's the Amicizia. First of all, you can go on my website. I have the video right there. www.paolaharris. So it's the Amicizia case, and it'll talk about it and show you the center or the villa where these beings were. And it'll show you the city. It'll show you the pictures of the craft coming out of the water. Now, this is 1956. You have to ask yourself where you were in 1956.
I was just born then, if you must
know. Well, you know, it's so weird that this situation, it was unheard of. It was like you couldn't, there was nothing around to compare it to. So the 10 people that were involved with these beings weren't watching science fiction movies. They actually lived this new paradigm that you talk about, the new paradigm.
So what else did they look like? Did they look human besides being 10 feet tall?
Oh, yeah. The guy that's 10 foot tall has a Hawaiian shirt and Bermuda shorts and curly hair. But he's so tall that the tree is down under his arm, you know. It's they're big people. They're giants.
Wow.
But the thing is, if you study history, on the island of Sardinia, we have bones and skeletons of giants.
Well, why? So how many Italians and how many aliens were there in this experiment?
Well, there was 10 Italians. There was only 2 women of that group. They were the wives of the people involved. And I don't know how many aliens, but there were 3 of them that communicated all the time. And the way they would ask to communicate would be, they asked them for a radio, a regular radio to be plugged in, and they would preempt the program, and their voice would come across the radio. So there's even, in some of the film footage, the voices of these people who are trying to speak good Italian, but they're making mistakes all over the place. They're trying to speak Italian, and they're trying to communicate with the people. What's interesting, and I will, and it's so long, the story, that we would go on forever, but that, if I spoke, that's what I would speak about at a conference.
I would
go into details about this. But what was interesting is the aliens told the humans, if you can remain harmonious and maintain harmony and do not fight among yourselves, that is a technology that will keep us here. The minute you people start fighting among yourselves and things become, unharmonious, we will leave. And the problem is, they call this technology, you can call it love for a want of a better word, if you want to call it love, I'm calling it harmony. But they called it Ureda. Ureda was their word for harmony. And as long as that group didn't get jealous one of the other and so forth, everything went okay. And it went okay for 10 years. Then it started. Then the jealousy started. You got to talk to him. I didn't get to talk to him. Why didn't you call me yesterday? This, that, and the other thing. And this disruption, and for me, this is the most important element of this experiment. Because this disruption was so bad, these beings left. And the Amicizia case, or the friendship case, was one case, but the other ones were in Germany and Argentina. They said there was another one in South America. So they tried it in different places on the planet.
Well, wait, what was the disruption there in their community? I mean, how did it work with among the small group?
Disruption in the human community.
Yeah, but how did it work just with aliens and humans living together?
They didn't live together. The aliens lived on Rocca Pia.
Oh.
They lived in a villa in Rocca Pia, and the humans lived in their own houses in Pescara, which is an Italian town on the Adriatic coast. They lived in their own houses, and they would communicate. They would meet along the beach. They would meet on a road. Sometimes the aliens would teleport themselves places, and the humans would communicate with them, mostly at night.
How long did this go on for? What was the length of this?
It went on for over 10 years.
So from 56...
It was top secret. It was a top secret experiment. It went on for 10 years.
From 56 to 66, you're saying? From 56
yeah,
to 66?
Yeah. And I have a feeling, just from having talked to the guys that were involved, that there's a possibility they could come back.
Well, if they come back, I think it'll be a bigger story. I mean, I think you know, I think we're ready for, at least those people interested in that now are ready for this.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that we've discussed, you know, everybody says our spirituality has not evolved as high as our technology. And in this case, the spirituality went down the tubes when the humans started fighting among themselves. They started, you know, when you have a group of people, the disruption that there is among the group of people, it's hard to keep harmony. It's hard to keep with these Italian, with these beings called Ureda. It's hard to keep that frequency. It's a frequency. It's hard to keep it because there's all kinds of stuff that come up.
Did you also tell me, or did I see a presentation where there was some hybrid children, offspring of these in Italy, of the alien-human connection?
Well, that was the Maurizio Cavallo case. That's a case I did so long ago. I did that 5 years ago. And those were the Polaroids that Maurizio Cavallo took aboard ship. And basically, those are Polaroids, so they're not altered. And at the time, it was 1980, so nobody was using Photoshop. But he was given the permission to photograph these beings in that the Clarion, this was Clarion, these were Clarion people, had a whole different group of people aboard their ship. In other words, it was a federation. And that story comes out of Torino. It comes out of the Italian Alps. So these are different spots in Italy.
Well, you know, the other thing about up in Torino or Portino, there's more crop circles that are appearing, very complex designs like they have been in Wiltshire. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, crop circles are not just a British phenomenon. And the problem with crop circles is that people aren't astute enough or haven't studied enough to know what in the world the design represents. They were so lucky in Great Britain to have Jaime Maussan go over there and look at the Mayan calendar and the Tolkien calendar and so forth to be able to look at those symbols because it's part of his culture. I don't know what in the world we're looking at in different parts of the world as far as the actual symbol. But I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't touched crop circles in my research. I don't touch it. The reason why is like all the stuff in ufology and like all the stuff in general, there's copycat phenomenon. And copycat would mean that humans are making some of them. And I don't know the difference, I can't make comments about it.
I brought it up because in Italy, near Torino, in a place called Portino, there have been some very complex designs that equal some of the complexities that are happening in England. So I just was wondering if you had talked to any Italians about...
No, I haven't. But, you know, Torino is a very mystical place. It's on an electromagnetic grid. Torino itself has a lot of esoteric people. It has a lot of agents. You know, near Torino is Dominor. You've heard of Dominor?
I've been to Dominor. It's a beautiful...
Oh, good for you.
I met Falco, the visionary. I've interviewed him. It was a beautiful mystic journey. Yes.
Well, good for you. You see, the thing is, you know why I'm happy about all this is because when I talk to people, they think that all the stuff happens in the United States. And in order to be a good researcher, you got to realize that these things happen all over the world. A lot of people are going to South America. A lot of people are going to... Asia and so forth, because this phenomenon is all over the place, and Dominor in Italy is a point of interest. People should go there.
I loved it. I mean, especially their time travel technology, which they were a little quiet about, but I did talk to Falco, the founder, and he had some very interesting things to say about time itself, in the sense that time is a property of objects. And if we understand that property, we can manipulate it. Everything
absolutely
has
and I think people have manipulated it.
And I think that gets us back to ETs, because there seems to be some time travel-like component with some of that phenomena.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, well, they'd have to... First of all, I mean, for the longest time, I remember when I was working with Alan Hynek, he said, well, you know, the biggest mistake we're all making is we think they can't get from here to there. I mean, which was ridiculous because it's our linear thinking. And now today they're talking about wormholes and dimensional holes and stargates and all this and all that today in 2011. And we're coming a long way. I mean, we're looking at the different possibilities. And the wormhole or the time travel technology has been there for a long time. It's just that there's only certain kind of people that are studying that. And it's very complex for the average human being to understand. It's complex. Do you realize what even when I talked about what happened in Pescara, and that's a true story about those aliens, it's very hard for the average person to believe something that is not in his paradigm, in his box. It's hard.
Exactly. That's why I do this program. First of all, I need to evolve out of my box and real, I mean, because I was brought up in the typical American education, and I know there's more, and UFOs were obvious to me that they were there. I think I've had contact or whatever, and we have to believe what's out of our box. That's the whole point of conscious evolution.
Yeah, so. But it's also like going to school, isn't it, in a funny kind of way? If you stay where you always were and you believe what you always did and you don't progress, you never leave the fifth grade. I mean,
exactly.
you want to graduate somewhere along the line, so
Exactly, but most people don't. I mean, my mother always says she wants every day to be exactly the same because she's a very fearful person. But, you know, the unknown is not full of fear. It's full of adventure and excitement and possibilities. That's what the unknown. So I think if we embrace these ET technologies, these ET possibilities, we will only have a better future. That's my feeling.
Well, that's a good, very, very progressive way of thinking. But, you know, people always say, well, do you talk about this stuff with regular people? And I say, no, I don't, because I believe some people are ready, and I believe some people are not. And to foist it on people like your mom would be a violence. I would never, ever force her to believe something
right.
else. She's comfortable. She's comfortable.
Right. I don't know, but she's like a lot of people who are, you know, I mean, she doesn't drink beer and watch football, but a lot of Americans watch their games, their sports, they go out, they don't even know there's a whole bunch of people demonstrating on Wall Street right now to kind of stop what's been happening in corporations. There's so much happening of transformation that the mainstream just wants to keep the status quo, where under their feet the carpet is being pulled out from under them.
That's a really good metaphor, actually. You said it. The carpet is maybe that, but the thing is this, that they have a hard time, and I really can feel for them. You know, a lot of times when I'm doing a presentation and I have all this research, and I have research that's real, I'm a nuts and bolts person. Remember, I was trained by Alan Hynek, you know, Close Encounters. So when I'm giving them the proof and when I'm giving them the testimonies, and that's, I don't do internet research. I fly all over the world and stay there for a long time and research. They're paralyzed in their chairs and they just don't know what to do because they're in shock. Their paradigm has been shattered. And in a way, I mean, their paradigm has been shattered, but you've got to replace it with something else. You're pulling the rug out from under them, but you have to also say, look, number one, there's nothing to be afraid of. Number two, humans are evolving into amazing, amazing humans. But in order to do that, we have to go through the initiation. It's like going to graduation. You can't go to college unless you do it. So we have to give them the tools or the way to do this so that it's not so traumatic for them.
Well, let's give them this is something I really do like to talk about. What are those tools that we can give people?
First of all, we can't foist it upon them. You have to kind of, and it should start with kids. Have you ever noticed in UFO conferences or conferences that are esoteric how few young people there are?
Yeah.
And you just go there and you're preaching to the choir. I mean, everybody that's there has had a sighting or something. I mean, and this is getting frustrating for me because I have a master's in education and I've taught high school for 30 years. So I that's why I was in Italy. I was teaching at a private school. And you know, it's very hard because I'm going, okay, all these people that are here, and I did a conference with Travis Walton, you know, and they know his case, and we're together, and we're looking at each other going, all these people that are here are going to die off, and where in the world is this going to go afterwards? I mean, there's nobody that's young that's going to take the baton and go on with this after, you know, this generation just goes off. So maybe what we should be looking at is education. Maybe that's why I went into exopolitics, because I teach online classes in this. I teach Michael Sala's Exopolitics Institute, and I teach the real stuff, the real first-hand source, not what somebody else said about something else.
A friend of mine was taking a class. My friend Jennifer was taking a class with you in exopolitics. She loved it.
Yeah, well, because it's the research. It's the audio tape of the person who was involved, like a Robert Salas, who was involved in the Maelstrom Air Force Base missile shutdown in 67. That really did happen. That really was a UFO. Those missiles had nuclear warheads on them. The UFO shut them down one by one by one by one. He was there. He was in the bunker. And so, you know, his testimony is part of my class, like the testimonies of all these people. And so, you know, when you're hearing these people's testimony, it's going to the source. It's not gossip. Then you're going, oh, my God, you know, this is real. Like, first of all, as a journalist, I'm going, what are they doing over a missile base? Well, they're giving a message that they might not like nuclear. I mean, that they may not be crazy about our messing around with nuclear weapons. Maybe they don't want us to annihilate ourselves, you know? I mean, could that be a possibility? You know, look at where they appear. Even Bentwaters had a nuclear storage area where they shot a light down over it. So, you know, you have to look at it. In my latest case, my brand new case that's in my book, that if you want me to talk about it, I think it's an amazing case.
We're almost at, we're sort of running out of time. Can you just mention it?
Yes, it's called the 1945 UFO crash in San Antonio, New Mexico. It was witnessed by two little boys who went up to the craft, not only saw the beings, saw the crash, and one of the boys, after the Army put it on a flatbed truck, he jumped on the flatbed truck and pulled a piece from the inside of the UFO, and they have it now. Both witnesses
Who has it exactly?
72.
Who did you say have it?
The boys that are now, the one that's 72 years old has it. Has the piece they pulled off. It's called.
And what are they doing with? I mean, is anyone examining it?
Yes, it's been examined. It's out there. I've put it on 5 radio shows. It's gone viral in Europe, and for some weird reason, the 1945 San Antonio crash has not been looked at by anybody. And I, you know, this is what's so frustrating, because these guys are still alive. And that's where I just came back from. I just went to San Antonio now. I went down to the area. I did the research. I went to Ground Zero. And I'll finish by saying that that crash was before Roswell, because UFOs are interested in our nuclear explosions.
Oh, well, no, but before you, can you wrap it all up and also say, like, where you think the whole thing is going? Will it be a mystery that will be solved at some point? I mean, what's the future of this work and this study for the planet?
Well, this is my opinion, okay? It's only going to be my opinion. I think the whole thing should go to a university. I think we should have classes in exopolitics. I think it, because then the future generation will know better and not make the mistakes we made. And I think disclosure is happening every day if everybody does their homework. This is disclosure. Everybody that comes forth is disclosure. And I think that the human being should not wait for any political structure to do it. The aliens are doing it. The aliens themselves that fly over the airport in China are doing disclosure. The people that are contacted, the talk, are part of disclosure. And slowly but surely, it'll creep into the mainstream.
Do you think it'll be over the course of 100 years, or you think it'll be more like immediate?
Immediate. It will be immediate. I mean, you can't stop this thing, because the reason why it's immediate is because we in history on this planet have a few decisions to make, major decisions. And they're
like
going to watch it and see if we make it or break it.
Well, tell us what those decisions are. What?
Well, the first one is the energy one. The ecology, the energy, the global warming, the sun's outrageous, activity, 2012, the collapse of an economy or a structure of any kind, the transformation of institutions in the world. I mean, every institution, every religion, every single Wall Street, you just mentioned it yourself, things are changing. They're going to watch to see which direction we're going. A friend of mine that I consider an incredible researcher, Renato Longato, said, the beings, the aliens, the visitors are cultural anthropologists. They're watching. They're watching to see what we do. And they appear. They let you know they're there, whether it's over the airport in China or over the airport in Chicago, the way the O'Hare sighting was. Or wherever they are, they're here. They're here. So, you can ignore it. And as you said, watch football and live your everyday life. Or you can pay attention. So mm-hmm. You have a choice. This is a planet of choice. And
but
I think it is immediate.
I think that I do agree with you that they're out for our evolution and benefit, but it goes against people like David Jacobs, and a little bit of what Bud Hopkins, the late, great Bud Hopkins, who was leaning towards a more, I would feel, paranoid interpretation of alien presence.
I agree, but, we have room for everything.
And yeah.
I'm not one, I don't criticize, but I don't agree with that stance, especially internationally. Other researchers and abduction researchers do not agree with that. But, everybody can give their opinion. That's what's so great.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think, what Einstein said, he says, we have to come to some understanding. Is the universe a friendly place or is it not? And
well,
I don't think
it's the universe that a friendly place. I'm going to just throw one thing at you that's
okay.
Going to shock you. I mean, an abduction for a human being, when they abduct a girl, what they do is rape her, slit her throat, and throw her in the trash can. I don't think aliens do that kind of abduction.
Right.
Okay? They put you back in bed. They may shock you, and they may take, DNA samples from you, but they put you back in bed.
They do. I mean, that is, though, and you do have to admit it is traumatic.
But it's less traumatic than killing you, slitting your throat, raping you, and throwing you in a dumpster.
No,
which
I agree, but the big trauma is, the trauma, and this is my research, is that we're confronting the unknown. We are meeting something that's out of our paradigm, and that's what people like John Mack called ontological shock. We're shocked
John Mack, and I miss him so much, was a very close friend of mine. And
yes.
John Mack had an open mind. And instead of making a value judgment, he collected the material. He collected all the stuff. That's what a good researcher does. Collect all the information. Do not make a judgment. But, the reason why I'm so passionate about telling you about violence is I'm so sick and tired of watching TV. Every single show has violence or criminality or somebody or some body or an autopsy.
Oh, it's awful. I don't watch television or even movies for that.
But
no, we are coming.
But that's what's being fed to the people.
We're coming into a new time, and I think people like you, me, the show, we're showing that there's other realities that are possible for us. I mean, the work of Richard Bartlett, Matrix Energetics, he's showing us that we actually do live in more than one dimension at once. And there's this is the new paradigm. This is the new realities that we're moving into. So
and that's a very positive, and I believe that too. It's just so hard to move into that with the media being so violently oriented. So I refuse to talk about good, bad aliens or violence when our society is just incredibly dysfunctional.
Well, it is, but that is the exaggerated point of view. Most people are just wanting to live a simple life, to love, to raise their families, to have enough to eat, to be creative, beings that explore new possibilities. This is what I feel the future is. So
I hope the future is that. That's what my future is.
That's what all of our future. Thank you. What's your website again?
paolaharris.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks. It's always great talking to you. We'll do it again. This is
Alan.
All right.
You take care.
Thanks, Paula. This is Alan.
All right.
New realities. Listen to the end of this song, After the Gold Rush by Neil Young. If you want to reach me, go to newrealities.com. This is Neil Young. And this is a song that really talks about this UFO reality. Fion's event, October 22nd.
I saw the silver spaceships flying in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen ones. All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home.
Thanks for listening to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld. I'll see you at the Friends of the Institute of Noetic Science, that's FIONS.org conference, October 22nd in New York City. Go to that website, FIONS.org. Buy some tickets, and Whitley Strieber, Linda Moulton Howe, and Richard Dolan will be there presenting on new information concerning the UFO reality. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.